8. Territory. Feudalization. Change and continuity under the Staufers. This chapter explores the empire's governance from the start of the Staufers in 1138 to the era of imperial reform around 1500. These 3.5 centuries are not normally considered together. Rather than continuity, most accounts stress a break around 1250, usually presenting this as the end of royal state building and the onset of political decentralization under a succession of weak kings. The narrative of decline rests on treating the empire as a conventional national monarchy, undermined by the Staufers' alleged disregard for German interests in favor of unrealistic ambitions in Italy. The usual interpretation places undue emphasis on aspects that were relatively unimportant to Staufer governance outside their Sicilian possessions, and misses the lines of continuity both backwards to the Salian era and forwards beyond 1250. The Staufers' real importance lies not in their failure to centralize, but their success in revising and recombining earlier methods into a new, more collective form of imperial governance by the emperor and a more self-conscious princely elite. Far from representing decline, the feudalization of the empire's lords and the territorialization of their authority actually preserved the empire once the Staufers themselves imploded after 1250. Sicily and the Crown Lands. The Staufers' conquest of Norman Sicily in 1195 certainly appears to signal a new direction. Sicily was a rich prize with over 500,000 inhabitants. The island was the Mediterranean's grain basket, and, together with its associated lands around Naples, it added 100,000 square kilometers to the Staufers' personal possessions. The Normans had already established a command monarchy, supported by a powerful judiciary using codified law, and an administration where written culture was routine. These structures were retained by Henry VI and Frederick II, who used them to consolidate their authority across the former Norman possessions, confiscating castles from recalcitrant nobles and redistributing them to loyal followers like Conrad von Urslingen, who already administered Spoleto after 1177 and now became governor of Sicily. Markvard von Anweiler, a former ministeriale, was entrusted with Ancona, Romagna, Ravenna, and the Abruzzi to secure the vital corridor linking northern Italy to the new southern possessions around Naples. However, most of the Norman treasures were distributed to reward Staufer supporters, while the invasion had literally cost a king's ransom. Henry VI financed the operation using the 16 tons of silver that England paid to free Richard the Lionheart. The Staufers also inherited the problem of split-site management from the Normans, who already had problems controlling the mainland barons from Sicily. These difficulties grew when Henry's unexpectedly early death at 32 was followed by papal interference and the double election of 1198, which destabilized Staufer rule in Germany and Italy. The Norman lords seized the opportunity to revolt, and their unrest continued into the 1240s with papal encouragement. In short, Sicily proved never sufficiently stable to be a base from which to reorganize imperial governance. Nor did the experience of ruling Sicily provide compelling evidence that its style of kingship was inherently superior to the methods developed over past centuries in Germany. The pro-Staufer lords clearly thought not, since they chose Frederick II's uncle, Philip of Swabia, in 1198, rather than renewing their endorsement of him as Henry VI's successor, made only 18 months earlier. The Staufers' engagement in Italy was more prolonged than that of the Salians. Henry IV spent only a quarter of his reign there, compared to a third under Frederick I Barbarossa and three quarters under Frederick II. Nonetheless, the family power base remained Swabia, which they had held since 1079, along with allodial possessions in Alsace. These lands were close to those of their Salian patrons. Thus, Conrad III's accession in 1138 shifted the empire's core region back to southwest Germany from the north, to which it had briefly moved under Lothar III. Barbarossa and Henry VI bought, or inherited, additional lands across southern and east-central Germany after 1160, increasing the number of individual crown properties to 4,300. Existing palaces were renovated and expanded, while new, fortified ones were built in their core region. Wimpfen, Gelnhausen, Hagenau, and Kaiserslautern, Altenburg, and Eger were constructed in central Germany to secure access to Bohemia. While scarcely a catastrophe for Germany, Henry VI's death in 1197 was a serious setback for the Stauffers, because it triggered the double election and civil war after 1198. The County Palatine on the Middle Rhine was seized by their wealth rivals, while the newly acquired properties in east-central Germany were lost. However, Frederick II recovered royal lands which, by 1241, were almost as extensive as at their peak in 1197, while the family's own possessions expanded considerably with the temporary acquisition of Austria and Styria in 1237. Royal possessions were managed more intensively through methods such as clearance of wastes and greater engagement in the commercializing economy. Royal officials recruited from ministeriales were posted to oversee crown lands, castles, and the growing number of imperial towns that the Stauffers also actively promoted. Governance followed a broadly similar path in Italy, though with far greater emphasis on reclaiming regalia rather than lands. Thanks to the new understanding fostered by the Worms Concordat of 1122, regalia were now more clearly understood as legal rights to exploit particular resources and to exercise certain kinds of jurisdiction, especially in Italy's numerous towns. Barbarossa convened an assembly of Italian lords at Roncalia, near Piacenza, in November 1158, and demanded the return of all regalia allegedly usurped since the 1070s. Contemporaries estimated these were worth £30,000 of silver annually. This was not simply an attempt to set the clock back. Barbarossa accepted greater demands for civic self-government, but insisted that the new elected officials swear loyalty to him as emperor. He also demanded that all towns maintain a royal palace, though he agreed these could now be placed outside their walls. Overall, he aimed to forge a more direct relationship with Italian towns, similar to that in Germany. Strong opposition in the form of the Lombard League forced him to compromise in 1183. Over the next 12 years, many of the recently recovered regalia were transferred to the cities in return for cash and political support, notably during the conquest of Sicily in 1194 to 1195. Henry VI renewed efforts at tighter control, appointing royal castellans in castles to curb civic influence in their rural hinterlands, but also continued to pawn Italian crown lands. Previous emperors had promoted tighter supervision of crown lands, notably Henry IV. Like their predecessors, the Stauffer's development of crown and family possessions was simply part of a wider range of royal strategies and certainly should not be interpreted as an alternative to feudalization, especially as the Roncalia Assembly also saw efforts to foster tighter political loyalty based on clearer reciprocal obligations between king and vassals. The New Feudal Order. Stauffer policies become clearer when we recognize they were not seeking a unitary state, but instead employed different methods in their various lands. In Sicily, they regarded themselves as the legitimate heirs to Norman hereditary kingship, whereas they tried to manage the empire by reworking relations with their vassals. This process has been labeled the feudalization of the empire, and represented the definitive abandonment of attempts to prevent fiefs becoming hereditary in favor of trying to turn this to the emperor's advantage. Lothar III had already attempted to reorder relations with his vassals by defining a longer and clearer status hierarchy in 1136. Conrad III continued this, as did Barbarossa after 1157, when he encouraged the use of Roman law, which was being studied at the new University of Bologna. Bologna lawyers helped define vassalage in more obviously feudal terms, but their influence should not be exaggerated, as the disassociation of public functions from aristocratic titles was already accelerating since the early 11th century. All lords were assuming broadly similar responsibilities, as, for example, bishops acquired counties and thus superior criminal jurisdictions. Meanwhile, the investiture dispute encouraged superior lords to fix their vassals' obligations more precisely in writing to be sure of their support. The process of feudalization involved identifying the scope of fiefs and their associated rights and obligations more clearly in written charters. This established a sharper hierarchy. The feudal lord retained superior powers over the fief, variously termed dominium directum, dominium feudale, or dominium superius, but always consisting of reserve rights expressed practically as the power to confirm the vassal's possession. The vassal enjoyed rights of usage, dominium utile, often defined expansively to include powers to develop the fief economically and to oversee the lives of its inhabitants. These distinctions were standard throughout Latin Christendom, but assumed a particular form in the empire thanks to the deliberate elaboration of a complex status hierarchy after the mid-12th century. The more intensive management of crown lands reflected how the Staufers no longer saw these as assets to be distributed as rewards for loyalty and support. Instead, they used their undefined imperial reserve powers to distinguish additional ranks of lords. Moreover, as suzerains of the entire empire, the Staufers retained existing powers to confirm or withhold recognition of individual lords' inheritance of what were now accepted as hereditary fiefs. Feudalization emerged ad hoc from the practical problems of managing the senior lords, notably the Welf family, whose rise demonstrated the problems associated with established methods. The Welfs were an old, well-connected family with several branches. The one established in 1055 around Ravensburg in Swabia rose to prominence through its appointment as Dukes of Bavaria in 1070. Although the Welfs lost this in 1077 after opposing Henry IV, they changed sides and were reinstated in 1096. 10 years later, they were allowed to inherit part of the Billungs' private property in Saxony and were rewarded with the Saxon ducal title in 1127 after their defection from the Staufers helped secure Lothar III's election. Heinrich the Proud, the leading Welf, was designated the successor by Lothar, only to be defeated by Conrad III in the 1138 election. The Welfs were punished through the loss of both duchies at Heinrich's death in 1139. But his only son, Henry the Lion, was compensated with the county of Brunswick and eventually recovered Saxony in return for recognizing Conrad III. This sequence of reward, punishment, and partial reinstatement was entirely in line with Salian and Ottonian practice and reflected the importance of personal friendships and animosities within the empire's lordly elite. However, these changes depended heavily on circumstance, like the opportunity provided by Heinrich the Proud's death, which allowed Conrad to block Henry the Lion's inheritance. Barbarossa took a different course by following Henry IV's example of splitting larger ducal jurisdictions to facilitate more subtle management of the senior lords. Barbarossa needed to reward Henry the Lion for his invaluable assistance in securing the royal election in March 1152, but he did not want to make him too powerful. Accordingly, when he gave the now vacant Duchy of Bavaria back to Henry in 1156, he simultaneously detached its eastern marches as a new duchy of Austria, which he gave to the Babenberg family. The Babenberg ally, Duke Vladislav of Bohemia, was granted royal status in return for renouncing claims to Austria and for accepting the incorporation of the pierced Duchy of Silesia into the empire in 1163. Meanwhile, a new Duchy of Moravia was created in 1152 from various lordships on the Croatian and Dalmatian coast and given to Count Conrad of Dachau. Henry the Lion was left as de facto royal governor of northern Germany during Barbarossa's prolonged absences in Italy. However, he used this to pursue a feud with the Archbishop of Cologne after 1166 over possession of Westphalia, the western part of the old Duchy of Saxony. He developed his own court, which, unlike the emperor's, was fixed in Brunswick. Henry became the first German lord to assume the prerogative of issuing his own charters, while his marriage to Matilda, daughter of the English King Henry II, appeared to confirm his regal aspirations. The deciding factor in the ensuing conflict was the relative willingness of the participants to accept obligations to the empire. Cologne's archbishop, Count Philipp von Heinsberg, won Barbarossa's favor by agreeing to provide additional troops, just as Henry refused to assist the imperial campaign of 1176 unless he received the royal lands at Goslar. The dispute deepened as Henry refused a personal summons to participate in another campaign. Barbarossa returned to Germany in 1177, having been defeated in Italy. He needed to reassert his authority and rally support, while Count Philip saw an opportunity to defeat his regional rival. Henry the Lion's trial in 1178 followed the conventional pattern of prolonged consultation amongst interested parties, allowing counts like the Ascania and Boguslav of Stettin a chance to complain about his overbearing management of northern Germany. The verdict was passed as the Gelnhausen Act on the 13th of April 1180. Henry was exiled, and Westphalia was given to Cologne as a distinct duchy, while the rest of Saxony passed to the Ascania Count Bernhard of Anhalt. 5 months later, Bavaria was transferred to Count Palatine Otto of Wittelsbach, another of Barbarossa's partisans. However, the process of 1156 was repeated, with the Margraviate of Styria being detached as a separate duchy under the Traungau family. A year later, Boguslav was freed from Saxon jurisdiction as Duke of Pomerania, while the Archbishop of Aquileia was given ducal rank based on the former Margraviate of Friul. These changes doubled the number of ducal titles since 1098. Henry the Lion returned from exile in 1185, but found little support for his efforts to reverse the Gelnhausen Act before his death in 1195. Henry VI's unexpected death in 1197 allowed Henry the Lion's son, Otto IV, to challenge the Stauffers, resulting in the 1198 double election. The Stauffer candidate, Philip of Swabia, was backed by the beneficiaries of the 1180 to 1181 redistribution, plus Mainz and the bulk of the imperial church and ministeriales. Only Cologne broke ranks, hoping to displace Mainz as the premier archbishopric by staging Otto's election. Otto also drew support from those alarmed by Stauffer absenteeism in Italy and Henry VI's proposal for a hereditary monarchy. Most of the fighting was in Italy, where it seriously damaged imperial prestige, but the war was already settled before Otto's defeat at Bouvines in 1214. Since most of his supporters had defected to Frederick II, who replaced the murdered Philip of Swabia as Stauffer candidate in 1208. The emergence of the princes. Frederick II confirmed Wittelsbach possession of the Palatinate and Bohemia's royal status after being elected king by his own supporters in 1212. Once his victory was secure, he formalized what until then had been a temporary expedient and granted uniform privileges in two charters to the spiritual, 1220, and lay lords, 1231. Other European monarchs issued similar general charters: England's Magna Carta, 1215, the Aragonese Privileges, 1283-1287, the Joyeuse Entrée of Brabant, 1356. Those in the Empire codified ideas of princely status, principatus, evolving since the 10th century, which suggested that all senior lords were collectively princes, regardless of their precise titles or lay or spiritual characters. Scholars in Bologna and elsewhere encouraged this with a new interpretation of ancient Rome's military and political elite as combining judicial powers, jurisdictio, with governance, regimen. In short, the charters did not devolve royal powers to the princes, but applied new terminology to distinguish them as a political elite above other lords. Already after 1180, Barbarossa distinguished more sharply between princeps and nobiles. Both were noble in the sense of socially distinct from commoners, thanks to their military function, but the former were now clearly politically superior. Frederick II's charters confirmed this by relating princely status directly to holding immediate imperial fiefs, Reichslehen. He retained the traditional position as suzerain, entitling him to confirm each new vassal in possession of his fief, and to adjudicate internal family inheritance disputes. However, the changes also brought significant new advantages. Confirmation of the new duchies enlarged the number of senior vassals immediately subordinate to the emperor. The grant of broadly similar charters to both spiritual and lay princes ensured a more uniform set of obligations towards the empire. Separate legislation since 1136 meanwhile strengthened the authority of the nascent princes over their own vassals, while continuing demographic and economic development ensured that, although smaller than the old duchies, the new ones could now be asked to provide more assistance. Finally, the Stauffer's parallel articulation of a collective imperial honor helped instill a sense of their obligations as binding on all in service to the empire, Reichsdienst. A new fundamental division between immediate and mediate vassals emerged as politically more significant than the earlier distinction between lay and spiritual lords. The charters identified the princes as a corporate group, collectively enjoying the status of imperial immediacy, Reichsunmittelbarkeit, directly under the emperor. Other lords were mediate, mittelbar, under at least one intervening layer of authority between them and the emperor. Ecclesiastical princely fiefs remained more defined than their secular counterparts, because they were clearly transpersonal, whereas secular ones depended on the size and biological survival of princely families. The Duchy of Merania on the Adriatic coast, created in 1152, passed on the extinction of the Counts of Dachau in 1180 to the Counts of Andechs, but was broken up when they died out in 1248 and was absorbed into Istria. In addition to Merania, there were 16 secular princes in 1200, including the dukes holding the rumps of Bavaria, Saxony, Swabia, and Lorraine, as well as Carinthia, and the new duchies of Austria, Brabant, Styria, and Zeringen. The others comprised Bohemia, now a kingdom, the Count Palatine, the Margraves of Brandenburg, Lusatia, and Meissen, the Landgrave of Thuringia, and the Count of Anhalt. Collectively, these princes held jurisdictions covering a third of the German kingdom. Another third was held by the 47 archbishops and bishops, 27 abbots and 18 abbesses comprising the imperial church. All archbishops and bishops now held secular powers in their lands comparable to dukes. The remaining third comprised royal domains and the possessions of around 80 counts and several thousand free nobles, all of whom were still immediate under the emperor, but lacked the prince's corporate privileges. Another 14 ducal titles were created across the next two centuries, compared to only two dissolutions following family extinctions, Morania, Zeringen. The Swabian title was also defunct following the death of the last Stauffer in 1268, when the bulk of its associated possessions passed to the Count of Württemberg. The Franconian title had been transferred to the Bishop of Würzburg in 1168, but effectively ceased to exist outside the bishopric itself. 12 of the new titles involved the elevation of loyal counts by grateful monarchs who used their prerogatives to adjust the status of existing counties to duchies. Brunswick's elevation was an exception that proves the marginal role played by personal possessions in the formation of German territories. Having returned to Germany and imprisoned his own son in 1235, Frederick II was at the height of his power and finally persuaded the Welfs to accept peace on his terms. They surrendered their allodial possessions around Brunswick and received them back as an imperial fief, augmented by the income from the crown lands at Goslar. This established Frederick's own claim on Brunswick's resources through vassalage and confined the Welfs to a relatively minor role until the family's dramatic resurgence during the 17th century. It also confirmed the three-way division of the old Saxon duchy into Westphalia, associated with Cologne, Brunswick in the center, and Saxon Lauenburg in the east, held by the Ascania until their extinction in 1689. The emergence of this princely elite around 1200 incorporated the more successful of the pushy new lordly families emerging since the later 10th century, who had acquired titles of margrave or landgrave, as well as the Count Palatine and the Ascania Counts of Anhalt. Similarly, the Counts of Sili acquired princely status without receiving a ducal title. Baden's rulers originated as a distant branch of the Zeringen family, installed as Margraves of Verona in 1061. They kept their Margrave title when they transferred to possessions on the Upper Rhine in 1112. The territories known later as Ansbach and Bayreuth became Margraviates through their acquisition by the Burgrave of Nuremberg around 1415. Brabant and Limburg became duchies around the beginning of the 12th century, as Henry IV and Henry V temporarily transferred the disputed Lorraine ducal title to their counts during the Salian Civil War. Likewise, the Lordship of Bouillon became a duchy in 1330 through its acquisition by later Dukes of Lorraine. What became known as the Saxon duchies emerged from the defunct Landgraviate of Thuringia, which passed to the Wettin family during the 13th century. Later partitions amongst the Wettins created separate duchies in Altenburg, Coburg, Eisenach, Gotha, Meiningen, and Weimar from fragments of Thuringia. Likewise, partitions within the Palatine and Welf families by the 17th century attached princely status to many of their counties and lordships, as these were parceled out among different heirs. In all cases, the emperor's permission was required, providing further opportunities to extract concessions from the beneficiaries. Hierarchy and status. The last of the medieval elevations occurred in 1495, when the Count of Württemberg was made duke, legitimated through his possession of Teck, which had once been held by the defunct Dukes of Zeringen. Thereafter, counts who were promoted simply received the title of Prince, Fürst, adding a subtle yet significant distinction between themselves as new princes and the old princely houses holding electoral, ducal, margravial, or landgravial rank. Titles served as fine distinctions within an otherwise common corporate group and became the focus of often intense competition during early modernity. All immediate fiefs were linked to the emperor through the obligations of vassalage. Women acquired the status of duchess, margravine, or princess through marriage or kinship, but were generally disbarred from fiefholding. This had obvious disadvantages, as families adopted more dynastic inheritance strategies. Since around 1037, emperors had designated some fiefs as Weiberlehen, permitting women to inherit if the vassal died without a son. The most important of these women's fiefs was Austria, which was designated as such in 1156. The emperor benefited from continuity of service since, though the female fiefholder could not serve herself, she was obliged to send male warriors to fulfill her duties. There were at least 10 female imperial fiefs by the 18th century, while Charles VI effectively converted the entire Habsburg hereditary possessions into one through the Pragmatic Sanction in 1713 to allow his daughter, Maria Theresa, to inherit. The idea of Leiheitswang, expressed in the 13th century Sachsenspiegel, suggested the emperor had to redistribute any fief that fell vacant. This was never formally adopted, and was rendered irrelevant by the flexibility of inheritance arrangements that ensured there were always heirs. In practice, the emperor had to buy off or defeat claimants if he wanted to retain a vacant fief. The difficulties are illustrated by the long and ultimately fruitless attempts by 13th century kings to retain the Landgraviate of Thuringia after the death of Heinrich Rasper in 1247. Many immediate fiefs were small and not associated with princely titles. Some were parcels of royal domains that remained in the hands of former ministeriales during the later 13th century. Others belonged to knights, who only secured recognition of immediacy in the 16th century. However, the vast majority were classed as mediate fiefs, following the Stauffer legislation, and in turn fell into two main categories. The first, known as knights' fiefs, Ritter or Schildlehen, obliged their holders to act as armed retainers for their lord, and provided the primary way in which princes discharged their own obligations to the empire prior to early modernity. The second category emerged through the extension of vassalage as a means of profiting from the new forms of wealth being created by commoners. Wallet fiefs developed in late medieval Austria and Bavaria as peasants agreed to pay dues into their lord's wallet, Beutel, rather than perform various services in person. In 14th century Brandenburg and elsewhere, burghers acquired fiefs, and even towns held them collectively. The commercialization of fiefholding and lordship generally allowed this to spread as lords sold or pawned fiefs. By 1596, 54 of Württemberg's 181 lesser fiefs were held by commoners. Contemporaries responded to the growing complexity of feudal arrangements by trying after 1200 to fix their overall structure in what was known as the Military Shield Order, Heerschildordnung. This envisaged a hierarchy descending from the king through ecclesiastical princes, secular princes, counts, and barons, sub-vassals of these, further sub-vassals or ministeriales, and finally the commoner, passive vassals. Authors accepted some regional variations, but such schemes remained an idealized representation of reality and were abandoned by 1500. There was never a single continuous feudal chain from king to peasant. All secular princes and most counts and barons were in fact immediately subordinate to the king and not through other intermediaries. More meaningful distinctions were expressed in new forms of homage and investiture rituals developed during the 13th century. Princes received enfiefment in person from the enthroned king to symbolize their proximity to majesty. Counts and knights were summoned to receive enfeefment from their nearest prince, acting as the emperor's proxy, while citizens swore homage through their magistrates in the imperial cities. Princely investitures assumed increasingly elaborate forms in the High Middle Ages. A prince would arrive at the emperor's camp with hundreds of followers, He would then ride round the king three times, while his nearest relations kneeled as petitioners before the monarch. The prince then dismounted and knelt to receive investiture. The development of heraldry added to the display. Electors received flags emblazoned with the badge of their arch-office, while senior immediate vassals were given red flags symbolizing their superior, bloody jurisdiction, Blutsgerichtsbarkeit, over capital crimes. Elements of written culture crept in. For instance, the counts were summoned by letter rather than imperial heralds by the 15th century. However, the rituals demonstrated the continued importance of the personal element in these arrangements, which, like those during the earlier Middle Ages, were agreed discreetly in advance to avoid public humiliation for the participants.